Good morning and welcome to the breakfast show on Faith FM with Scaffy and Lawson. This is the right table for you to start your day with positive thoughts and solid spiritual foods. You're listening across Australia on 87.6, 87.8, or even 88, depending on where you are or on our Faith FM app. You can chat to us by sending a message to 0491-064-669. And today is Wednesday, April 17. The time now is 7:05 a.m. New South Wales time. I'm in the studio today with Lawson, Shell, and Brian. Good morning, Lawson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Shell, and good morning, Brian, as well, who is training to be our producer as well.
Yeah, to get in, be a producer, get it done, you know, hang out on the decks. Live your best
hang
life.
Out on the decks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not on the wooden deck.
No, not
but
on the deck.
On the DJ deck. Which
decks.
Is AKA the desk.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Lawson,
glad
of,
we could clarify that. How are you going this morning,
I'm
Joseph?
Doing great. I'm doing great. I have a thought of the day for you,
okay.
Lawson. Money has great value because it can do good. Mm-hmm. In the hands of God's children, it is food for the hungry, drink for the thirsty, and clothing for the naked. But money is of no more value than sand. Mm. Can you eat it? What can you do with it? So money is no more value than sand, only as it is put to use in providing for three things, the necessities of life, in blessing others, and advancing the cause of Christ. This is a statement from Christ Objects Lessons, page 351. And this is a Christian worldview about what's the usage of money for. Money is to be used to blessing others, advance the cause of Christ, and provide for the necessities of life.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. God has blessed us with means to be able to bless others. It's powerful when we use it.
It simplifies things, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
In today's show, Lawson is going to give us some interesting news. Bruce Lerman found guilty of rape. Interview with Jennifer Skews about resilience, how to build mental resilience in our children. You cannot miss that one. We're going to be interviewing here at 7:35. And later on, we're going to be looking at how to safeguard from Satan's deceptions according to the Bible.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
We have our quiz of the day. Quiz number one. Lawson, what is the question that you are itching to know the answer to?
It's simply this. How many days did the plague of darkness last? Which is like such a hectic thing. Imagine.
We're talking darkness where you can't even see your hand in front of you.
That's right. This is, you know, ancient Egypt. We're talking about the story of the Exodus. And you wake up one day and the sun's not up. And you're like, oh, maybe I woke up early.
Maybe I'll go back to bed and sleep a little bit further.
But then the sun just continues to not rise. If you know how long the sun didn't rise for, again, that number was 0491-064-669. This is multiple choice. So here we go. These are your options. Was it A, 1 day, B, 2 days, C, 3 days, or D, 4 days? Okay. If you know how long it was that the sun didn't come up for, that there was a plague of darkness on Egypt, 0491-064-669. And if you answer that question correctly, you go into the draw to win. We have two amazing books by Suki Gunatilleke. These books are written about the awesome era of faith that people, you know, and the incredible things they endured during the Reformation era. It's a powerful, powerful testimonies about people of influence, people coming from all kinds of different backgrounds who stood for the Bible and would even end up giving their lives for that. We've got these two books here. We've got Sisters in Arms and As Bright as the Stars, all about Reformation history, all about people who stood for God's word. If you want these books, 0491-064-669, you just have to answer questions and we'll be doing our draw. Well, will we be doing it on Friday or Thursday, Shell? Because we are heading up to camp. So will we be spinning the wheel tomorrow or the...
Yeah, we'll be doing it tomorrow. We won't be having a live show this Friday. Mm-hmm. So the wheel will get spun on Thursday.
That means you have less opportunities to get in. That means there's more pressure, guys. Send in your answers, 0491-064-669. How many days did the plague of darkness last? A1, B2, C3, or D4? Let us know.
Lawson, I heard that you have a story for us about wombats. Now, wombats are adorable creatures, and I'm wondering, what good news can you bring to us from the wombat world?
So, the world's oldest wombat. How old do you think the world's oldest wombat would be?
Man, you caught me by surprise. Well, wombats are the size of a dog.
Yeah.
I would expect that they would have a similar lifespan.
Yeah.
I would say, look, 16 years.
Okay, that is a good guess, but completely wrong. You need to double it. This wombat living, this is so cool. It's a 34, 35 year old wombat. It's the oldest living wombat.
Wow.
And the amazing thing about this is where it lives.
Almost my age.
Because this wombat lives in a blue zone, which I was like, I thought was so funny. Well, near a blue zone. It lives
About the Blue Mountains.
It's at the Satsukiyama Zoo in Japan, in Ikeda. So just like right up the road from Osaka there in Western Japan. And just, I would say like a 1 hour flight from Okinawa, which is like the Japan's blue zones. Now, if you don't know what the blue zones is, there are about four or five of them around the world. And they're essentially places where people have the best health and they live the longest. And you have, Okinawa, Japan, and Sardinia,
not only live Italy. The longest, but they live the best as well.
That's right.
About people that are running marathons at in their 90s, even 100. That we're talking about quality of life, not just like living to 100 and with poor health. No, this is not that.
Now, this wombat, his name is Wayne, or they call him Mr. Wine as well. And he lives in the zoo there and gets well looked after. And he is like one of the premier animals in the zoo. Also because he's so old as well. They just love, and this is actually so true. I've had Japanese friends coming over here to Australia to study and whatnot. And they just love like wombats and quokkas and kangaroos. They're just, all they want to do is see them. Like,
oh,
I know.
Quokkas as well.
Yeah, quokkas. The amount of Japanese people that I know that will be like coming to Australia, living in Newcastle, studying at Newcastle University, and during their time here, they've planned a trip to go to Western Australia just to see quokkas, or to go to the zoo just to see wombats. Like, they love these animals, and they've got the oldest one in the world there in Japan, living its best life. And the question for me is, okay, what enables a wombat to live so long? Because I thought the same thing. I'm like, it's like a dog.
So usually,
right?
How long does a typical wombat live in nature?
Yeah, around 25 years old.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, so I'm like, what enables?
Maybe because they're vegetarian or
that's
something.
That's exactly what it is. They are herbivores, and so their diet consists of grass and of fruit and of trees and of herbs and whatnot, of barks.
I heard
that
they love carrots.
Yeah, oh dude, you could feed this thing anything plant-based, and it will just get into it. And it enables them to live older as well, and to live their best lives. And I was looking up, I was like, what does the Bible say about old age? I was reading in Proverbs 16:31. It says, "Gray hair is a crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life." You know, there are some people who hold the mantra of live fast, die young. And then there are some who hold the mantra who, maybe less extreme than that. It's more just like kind of live good, just do whatever you want, die while you're young. Maybe not like live fast, but hey, just have a good time, get in, get out. But the Bible actually advocates on many occasions for, striving for old age and being enabled to do so through righteous living, through living healthfully. And a vegetarian diet, just like these, beautiful, amazing wombat who's living over there in Japan, is definitely a way to go about it. And we know a common theme throughout all the blue zones, and especially the only blue zone I wouldn't say the only blue zone in the Western world, but the only blue zone, a blue zone in America, which is very perplexing. It's like, how in America, where they have, such high levels of heart disease and all kinds of struggles there, do they have a blue zone in Loma Linda, California? The thing that's mostly advocated for to enable long living and health is a vegetarian
plant-based diet. Yeah.
It's such a blessing. And it's amazing. I think
at Stanford University, they came up with this motto saying, let me see if I can get it from my head. It's eat food, not too much, mm-hmm. mostly plants. And that is the state of the art of human scientific yeah. knowledge about diet and health today. Eat food as opposed to what? Fast food, junk, ultra processed things. I'm talking about eating the real deal.
Eat real food.
Not too much. Not too overeating. Much.
Yep.
Mostly plants.
Wow.
That is it. This is encapsulates all of the state of the art human wisdom on all the scientific literature about food.
Yeah, it reminds me as well of the quote from Francesca Susanna, who was the previously oldest living person in the world, living in the Philippines, which is just amazing. The oldest living person in the world living in a third world country, and particularly not just living in Manila or one of the capital cities, like living in the jungle in the Philippines. You know, she's living to like 124, and they ask her, what's your secret? She says, I've got two secrets. Eat vegetables, have faith in God. Like, and she was an amazing Seventh-day Adventist lady who just lived on a plant-based diet, who loved Jesus, and as a result, lived long. And this is the key thing here as well. We're not just saying, oh, prolong life for prolonging life's sake. But if we're healthy and we're eating healthy, if we're looking after our bodies in the way that God advises as well, we know that these, and we've talked about this with Dr. Justin Jackson, this advice for health in a plant-based diet comes originally from the Garden of Eden. This is the diet that we were prescribed by God. It enables us to be more of a blessing.
Yes.
Living in health helps us to bless others.
Yes, that's right. And I think that goes right into the quote of the day as well. Mm. If the purpose of money is to provide for the necessities of life, to bless others, to advance the cause of Christ, well, from a biblical perspective, living a long life is basically the same thing. You're using your resources, in this case, your time, so that you can provide for the necessities of life, you can bless others, and you can advance the cause of Christ.
That's right. And maybe someone could take what we're saying and they're like, oh, wait, so if I don't live long, you know, that I'm not valuable. What if I've got some kind of disease or some kind of issue? And that's absolutely not what we're saying. Jesus died young. You know, people who there are all kinds of weaknesses. That
there's only so much you can do, but there are things that you can do.
That's right. If you struck with some kind of disease or issue or illness, and life is cut short or life is debilitated, like what we know and what Jesus shares quite clearly is that God wants to be with you through those struggles. In your weakness, He is strong, but we can also strive to do the best we can.
So, in summary, be like a wombat, eat more plants,
yes,
and live longer.
Yes.
Thanks for that story, Lawson.
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And Lawson, before we talk about what happened to Mr. Bruce Lerman and the findings of Judge Michael Lee, Justice Michael Lee, we would like to ask our listener another question, another quiz question that will not only increase their Bible knowledge, increase their overall knowledge, make them the most interesting person in the room, but also will give them the chance to find exquisite literature on women of fiber and faith. This is a great book, not only for you to read yourself, but also to give it as a gift. But what is the quiz number two, Lawson?
What was the name of Moses' mother?
Oh, that's an easy one.
Simply that. Hey, 0491-064-669. What was Moses' the name of Moses' mother? If you know the answer, you can go into the draw for, we've got two books by Suki
Ginnitalaki. I almost fell out of my bed.
What?
After you said that question. What?
Come on, stop. He's we've got Joseph's
sorry,
making
I'm
some
making
sly
a joke.
Remarks, some jokes,
out of my bed.
Some giving away some
guys. I pay $100 a year to be part of the proud dad's joke club in Australia.
Do you really pay $100 a year?
No, that was a dad joke.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But I have to get my penny, you know, my bang for my buck, Lawson.
Yeah.
You know, it's
that's classic. Hey, look, again,
if you can't do dad jokes as a dad, what's the use?
You pay if it's not $100 a year, it's far more to be a part of the dad joke club. Like, hey, again, that question was, what was the name of Moses's mother? 0491-064-669 is the number to text if you know the answer to that one.
We have a couple of messages here. David says, good hump morning, Faith FM radio team. Edgar, David, David, thank you very much. From David of Ellenbrook. I didn't know what a hump day is, and now I did discover hump day. Lawson, what is a hump day?
Oh, it's like the middle of the week.
The middle of the week. So that's what a great Wednesday way is. To call Wednesday.
You know, because you get over the hump, and then you just ride the momentum through to Friday.
I was thinking, man, is today like the International Day of Humpback Whales or something? You just missed that important environmental day. And it turns out it's just another name for Wednesday. Braden said, there are examples in the Bible of a productive life lived short and unproductive lives lived long. Yes, that is very, very true, Braden.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. David also said, hey, Shell, Lawson, and Joseph, and Brian, there was a New Zealander, Tash, on the Thursday afternoon show called Real Faith. And her grandmom lived till she was 121 years.
That's incredible.
Wow.
That is incredible.
That is incredible. And yes, this is it, I think, for our listeners' responses and comments today. And tell us, do you like Wombat? 0491-064-669. Or, you know, Lawson, one of the quiz questions could be, what is the shape of a Wombat's poo?
Okay.
And you can give four alternatives here. Is it round? Is it a square? Is it a cube? Or is it a sausage shape? And guys, Wombat's poos is not that gross because they only eat plants, but they have a very unique poo shape.
Yeah,
because of their how their intestinal tract works.
I'm feeling a bit gross right now, Joseph. We are the breakfast show.
Well, okay. There's an Aussie company that sells. I won't say that. Okay. It's borderline, you know?
Between it's okay. It's okay. Shout out.
All right.
Let's move on to our news of the day.
Are you going to give us the answer, though, or you want people to text in?
Yeah, I want people to text in. Let's see who knows it. And we're going to read that one. What is the shape? Trivia. It is an interesting trivia. What is the shape of the Wombat's poo? It is very unique, let's say so, in the whole animal kingdom. So we would like to know if you know this answer. And you're not going to be going for the draw, but we would have some good laughter reading your responses. Lawson, a warning. This news contains references to sexual abuse. So if you need help, call 1-800-RESPECT. On Monday, Justice Michael Lee found Mr. Bruce Lerman, former liberal staffer, to be guilty of rape against Mrs. Brittany Higgins. And everybody's talking about that. It has been on the news for ages. It's been in the front covers of every major newspaper in this country. And I thought, no, could we talk about that? Is there anything that we could relate to from a biblical perspective so that you can share, perhaps, with your friends at work? Hey, this is what the Bible has to say about this subject. And Lawson, among the evidence used, and by the way, the conviction of this crime was based on, and Justice Michael Lee stressed it, on the balance of probability. Balance of probability. So he's looking at all the evidence, he's weighing that out, and the balance of probability, we have found this to be a rape.
Which is usually the case in these kinds of issues and whatnot that goes on, because it can be difficult to you know, really establish.
That's right. That's right.
Whatnot.
It could be. Exactly.
So, yeah, but they've said, hey, look, probable cause is this.
So this is some of the things that have been revealed by the evidence that were assessed by the judge, that Mr. Lerman and Miss Higgins were at a bar, at a pub, and he was encouraging her to drink, and as he says, well beyond sobriety. You know, I think that Justice Michael Lee said something that to say that she was drunk was an understatement.
Yeah.
And this was part of the evidence, because after that, they both allegedly took an Uber to the Parliament House, where Bruce said, oh, yes, I'm going to go back to work, after him himself being, you know, drinking a fair bit, after Miss Higgins being well beyond drunk. And they went there and they even had the recordings of his voice talking to the security guards at the entrance of Parliament House, saying, hey, I'm coming here. I have to pick up some documents. And just as Michael Lee said that he doubted that what they were going to do there was to analyze some nuclear submarine related documents.
Yeah.
It was of a different nature. And so what happened in that? So the whole situation of a sexual abuse occurred and, and the justice Lee found it to be guilty. Now, it reminds me of one Bible passage here. And I think that this is in line with biblical principles, that judgment. And look at this one. It is from the book of Habakkuk, the Old Testament book of Habakkuk, the minor prophet Habakkuk, chapter 2, verse 15. It's written, "Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to your bottle, forcing someone or encouraging someone to drink, even to make him or her drunk, that you may look on their nakedness." This is exactly what is happening here. Is you forcing someone, or not forcing, let me backtrack there, but you encouraging someone to drink beyond any acceptable levels of sobriety so that your judgment will be impaired.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this was one of the So, you know, is a person that does that to someone else even concerned with consent or not? This was one of the lines of reasoning from Justice Michael Lee.
Yeah, and the case is no. Like, this is reprehensible, and I'm happy with the judgment. I'm like, yeah, like, someone who takes advantage of a person in that way deserves judgment. And it's interesting because during this time, the defendant, Lerman, actually, there was a case against Channel 10 and Lisa Wilkinson regarding, you know, because they had reported on it and said that they thought he was guilty. And he was like, "How dare you say that to me?" You know, and yes. He was suing Channel 10. And that case has come out as lost as well because he was ultimately found guilty. It's tough as well because it's like, oh, can you say that someone is guilty before they've been, you know, formally charged and made, you know,
and that's why defamation guilty. Lawsuits exist for.
Yeah. But the reality is that this person will receive a judgment that is fair, and that's because this is a terrible crime and a terrible situation, and it's simply the case of someone taking advantage of a vulnerable person for their own
gain. Yes. And I hope that, you know, that sentence will make Mr. Lerman to really rethink his position with God. Maybe he can think about that for that passage and say, "Hey, this is not acceptable." You know, one of the things as well is that this passage is used as an evidence to support by some people to say, you know, when Jesus, you know, well, but didn't Jesus, you know, offer wine to people? Well, on the weight of the heaven, on the balance of probabilities, it was not alcoholic wine, but grape juice was also called wine because Jesus would never contradict himself and the Bible by making people drunk. And if he transformed that into wine, he would have so. So this is one of the evidences that we have around that passage.
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Lawson, what's quiz number 3?
Hey, the next quiz question, simply this. What creature bit Paul's hand when he was gathering firewood? Was it a wombat? Hey, If you think wombats
wouldn't do that.
Nah, they're too cute and nice. Hey, 0491-064-669. What creature bit Paul's hand when he was gathering
firewood?
And actually, like, God using a situation which is, I think, especially for Australians, is, like, quite scary. This is, you know, worst case, you know, scenario kind of story. And turning it around to be able to share the gospel. You know, it's a powerful, powerful story. If you know the answer, again, that number is 0491-064-669. We've got these two books by Suki Gunatilleki all about Reformation history, which we want to give to you absolutely for free, which is our prizes. Again, what creature bit Paul's hand when he was gathering firewood?
Maybe if we have a listener that is a filmmaker, they could be inspired by these books by Suki Gunatilleki.
Yeah.
And produce some incredible documentaries, podcasts on the story of these incredible women of courage and faith, Lawson.
Just like lineage.
This might be their ticket to fame and fortune, and of course, using money to help others,
bless others,
and, you know, advance the cause of Christ. But 0491-064-669. Let us know what creature bit Paul's hand when he was gathering firewood. And we now come to our Mental Health Day, Wednesday, with Jennifer Skews, our health psychologist. Welcome to the show, Jennifer. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Jennifer, we have been reading on the news cases and after cases of young people that as a result of bullying, they decide to either take their lives or as a result of bullying, they become extremely depressed and start to lose their normal functionings of life. And one of the questions that we believe it's important to ask is how can we help our children build mental resilience?
It's a difficult one with resilience because it's not something we gain at birth. It is not, it's something that we develop and we have to embrace and we build over time. Okay, so we talk about emotional resilience, and that means to be able, because what is resilience? It's the ability to, I guess, stand up, persevere, remain strong in the face of difficulties, trials, or adversity. And when it comes to bullying, it wears these children down. They don't have that resilience. They don't know what it is, and they don't understand how to stand up and how to resist. It's something we learn to do. And how do you learn it?
That's a great question. How can we do this? You know, we're talking about a kid that is suffering bullying. What are the things that, you know, parents could tell them? You know, do they fight back? What do they tell the teacher? What advice could be given to a parent in that situation?
Okay. It's a hard one because from my perspective, having come out of the world, I wasn't an active Christian, I didn't have the resilience, whereas I found having a relationship with the Lord has given me resilience. So I don't think it's something we can just have and a parent can go, oh, just, you know, tough it out, stand up. A parent, I think, can help encourage, give the child skills to set healthy boundaries. Maybe learning things about if there's a bully there, they don't have to stand there and take it, and having a look at safety. How can they feel safe again? It's because resilience is an internal factor. It's hard to describe because it's not something that is concrete. It's a personal experience.
That is very interesting. So, you know, having a relationship with the Lord Jesus, a strong faith, that is one of the elements that help, encouraging to set healthy boundaries as well. And you mentioned that resilience is an internal factor. So what does resilience say? So when we're going through adversities, what are the thoughts, what is the language that is happening inside of our mind that would characterize a resilient mind?
Okay, well, let's have a look at what doesn't characterize. People who have fear cannot be resilient. You know, if we feel we lack confidence, and where do I get my confidence? Because sometimes I don't have much confidence, and that's where that relationship with the Lord comes in. But it's something that if we have been worn down, if we're tired, if we haven't given the skills, I think there is a skill attached to being resilient because it's the way you think. Okay, so if I think in terms of fear, I won't be resilient, I'll have to run and hide. Whereas if I can understand maybe where that person's coming from and understanding the bully, that's one thing I will do, particularly with children or even adults who are being bullied, is why is the person bullying you? You know, what power do they have over you? Because often we empower them, we give them that power by cowering down or allowing them to do it. So I think it's something our internal perspective of the event and what's going on and what help and support we have. You know, who can you go to? Who can help you?
That is very interesting. You mentioned that we sometimes may give them power. How does one person give power to a bully? What kind of behaviors would characterize that?
Okay. By not being able to stand up to them, by allowing the bully to hurt us, and often bullying is verbal. It can be physical, but certainly verbal. And for someone who is being bullied, say in the schoolyard, for the child to be able to say, "I don't need to. What you're saying isn't true," and walk away. You know, do we believe what the bully's telling us? I think that's one factor of it. How much do you really believe? You know, if people are bullying you, do you believe what they're saying? Because that disempowers you and gives them power. They look for your weak link. They look for weakness. They wear you down.
That is very interesting. No, I think that's a great question. Do we believe that what the bully is telling us? Because they're coming up with a narrative. They're coming up with a putting us down. And, you know, do we believe that? And a lot of times I believe that people start double second guessing themselves. Isn't that true?
Oh, they do. They doubt themselves. But see, one thing I found, because we're looking specifically, resilience is a general thing. We all need to have resilience. You're talking specifically about being bullied or the bully, and particularly children in the schoolyard. So that's a specific incident we're talking about here. Yeah. And when it comes to bullies, people who bully you and trying to be, stand up to be resilient and not let it affect us, look at the bully, because the bully is usually a very often an insecure person who's had an awful home life, if it's a child, that they have been compromised themselves. And often when you stand up to them, they will back down.
Very interesting. What languages, for example, we're talking about, you know, resilience against bullying, because as you mentioned well, and then we can explore that in the second part, is resilience against loss, against adversity, which doesn't necessarily have an individual behind it. But what would be one way at a person, let's say at the workplace, and a bully is making jokes, you know, jokes that everybody know that you don't think it's funny. How can you stand up for yourself, and how can you confront them? What language would be helpful in that situation?
Well, now you're talking about boundaries. We're not talking so much about resilience now. It's talking about how do I now stand up to that person? And that means to be able to not let the joke or point out the joke isn't appropriate, it's not funny, and walk away, don't listen to it.
Very interesting.
But doing it nicely, not doing it in the same way or questioning it.
Very interesting. So what about, let's get back to resilience. As, you know, as you mentioned, well, boundaries and resilience, they work together. It's part of a resilience strategy, I believe, to have healthy boundaries. But what about when it's not really related to a person, and someone is going through adversity, it could be the loss of a job, it could be a war, it could be a house that has been taken away. What does resilience look like in these cases?
Well, when you are a resilient person, it doesn't mean you don't feel those things. I mean, those things can be quite what we call soul-destroying at times, where it affects us, but a resilient person will work through it. And this is where I find having a spiritual life, tapping into that strength that God can give us. Because, you know, if you're in Philippians 4:13, it says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So where does your strength come from? Because often we feel weak in those circumstances. And sometimes allowing ourselves to be in that space, you know, so with grief and loss, people who've lost a loved one, they feel very, they're grieving, they're worn down, they don't know how to deal with it. But this is where resilience is, where I guess you could say faith will take them through it. But also when you look at a resilient person, they allow themselves to grieve. They will allow themselves to cry or to be upset. They won't bury it. They won't push it back in. They will allow themselves to accept it and come to terms with it. That's gives you strength.
Jennifer, it sounds like to build up resilience, there is an important role of a healthy and strong spiritual life here. Because because you mentioned here, for example, lack of resilience. If lack of resilience sees despair in the future, resilience sees hope.
Well, it is. We have hope. A resilient person always has hope.
Another thing is identity. You said, okay, do we believe these lies about ourselves, or do we have an identity that is solidly informed by what God thinks of ourselves? We choose that narrative over the narrative of other human beings. You mentioned about strength, feeling while a lack of resilience feels powerless or, I guess, weak, resilience feels strong. And feels that there's someone that is able to help, even if it's someone, a human being or God.
But often we feel weak first, and that's when we turn to a strength. Because, Yeah, I can feel weak first. So it's okay to feel weak. Wearing me down.
It's okay to feel weak. The problem is not about feeling weak or not, but what we do with that weakness. Who do we bring them to?
Are we going to let it sink into it and let us overwhelm us? And that's what happens with children who end up suiciding. They cannot see a way out. Mm-hmm. Okay. In my resilience, I might feel weak at the time, but then, and this is where I think the power of prayer, for asking help, there is a way out. And we need to find that way out. Sometimes it might be in another person will give us the way out. Sometimes it might be something I read or you read will give you the way out. But this is where we're not giving up. We might be sitting in those feelings because trials and tribulations particularly can be overwhelming. It's like a flood sometimes. How am I going to deal with this? We often question ourselves, but sometimes sitting with it. You know, and that's where with people I get them to work, do a bit of body work and their heart rate's all over the place, getting to do some breathing and calming, being in a better environment, go outside, sit in the sun, allow yourself to sit with it and then step back. And sometimes writing things down, how you're feeling, what's going on, what the problem is, what the trial is, how am I going to deal with it? Getting some help, you know, a professional person or someone that you trust will be giving you some feedback.
That is very interesting. You know, all of these part of our strategies of dealing with loss, dealing with difficult situations. And Jennifer, we have about a minute and a half left, but I wanted to ask you this. Can you come to your mind, you know, coming back to idea of identity, a strong sense of identity as a factor of resilience? So we see often people saying, you know, if everybody's laughing at me, everybody's calling me names, you know, I cannot stand it, I cannot endure it, I'm going to end my life kind of a thought. What biblical principles or passages can come to mind that would bring a positive identity statement that will challenge and will help in that process?
Well, I think, first of all, just remembering the power of God in your life. And do you believe what you're being told? You know, if I believe what the person's saying, then I'm going to be worn down and challenging it. And this is where the power of prayer. And then the Bible talks a lot about praying and asking for help. You know, and God, and I think remembering, and this is where the Bible tells us God is in control. Yeah, and I think that's, for me, a very powerful thing. No, it's okay. God is in control of this.
Wow. Jennifer, I believe that these are strategies. And now I want to ask our listeners, what do you think about resilience? Do you struggle with it? Do you have found any strategy helpful to your situation? Let us know, 0491-064-669. Jennifer, thank you very much. Do you have a last word to our listener this morning?
Well, I just think that there's a quote here that I've got. There's only one power in the world great enough to help us rise above the difficult things we face, and that's the power of God.
Wow. Jennifer Skews, thank you very much.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.